Podcast.
Experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at ticketking.com. Again, that's at ticketking.com.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Pulse of the Pack. I am your host, Jacob Westendorf, here on Victory Tuesday. I am happy to announce that the Green Bay Packers have beaten the New York Giants 23-16. I'm sure that that isn't a breaking news for any of you. But it's been a while since we've been here, so I wanted to make sure that you guys know that we are still alive and in the news and not living under a rock. And I also must remind all of our listeners a little bit of a humble brag here, if you will. Since the last time we recorded, the Michigan Wolverines beat the Wisconsin Badgers 14-7. Great game all around. Hats off to my friends of the show that are Badgers fans, but it is great to be a Michigan Wolverine, and I am more than happy to say that the Badgers lost that game. Now I am on your side this weekend as they go on to take on the Ohio State Buckeyes. So on Wisconsin, there's me playing both sides of the coin. I feel like a politician in this election season. Joined with me is Jason Perrone. Jason, how are you?
Doing good. Doing very well. And I got to give you some credit as a quasi-Badgers fan. You know, I'm an Arizona State Sun Devil first and foremost, but I have to give it up to Michigan. They played a great game. Obviously, anytime you hold your opponent to only 7 points, it is a huge feat. I know there's no such thing as a moral victory, but holding the Michigan Wolverines to 14 points is also no small feat. So congrats to both teams, but Michigan head and shoulders above the rest, and it looks like they're going to be in the mix this season. So you're in for a fun ride, hopefully on the college and the pro side of things. So that's good for the college football portion. But, Jacob, I have to give you a moment, give you the floor back and give you a moment, because I know that we've seen a lot of big names leave the sporting world this year or over the last year. I know Derek Jeter was last season, and we saw Kobe, Tim Duncan, all these big names have kind of hung up their shoes, their jerseys, cleats, whatever you want to call it. The most recent of which was one David Ortiz, who plays for the Boston Red Sox. So I'm going to give you the floor back and give you a few moments to acknowledge the career of one Papi Ortiz.
I'm more than happy that his career is over. I was excited last night when the Indians knocked the Red Sox out of the playoffs. And David Ortiz is the only player in the history of Major League Baseball that has ever gotten a pass for using performance-enhancing drugs when he has a failed drug test on his file, and people are all like, yeah, but they're willing to make excuses for that guy, but not make excuses for anyone else. And I think that's asinine. So, as I said last night, good riddance, David Ortiz. Jason, anything to add?
I mean, he's a big part of baseball, but I've never been a huge Red Sox fan. So off he goes into the sunset. I personally think they're all taking PEDs, and frankly, I really don't care. Baseball is fun again, and I think, Jacob, you and I are both Team Cubs right now, so I know that's going to infuriate a bunch of our listeners who are Brewers fans and cannot stand the Chicago Cubs, but alas, you live in the state of Illinois. I'm from the state of Illinois. I have a lot of family that have never seen the Cubs win a World Series, so I'm on the Cubby bandwagon. But enough about baseball. We got some really fun football to talk about, and it's been a couple weeks, so it's good to be back in the saddle, brother.
It is. It's good to be back, and you're right. I am Team Cubs for now. It's 1-1 as we speak against the San Francisco Giants. The Cubs win there in the NLCS, but you are right. This is a football show, and there's some good football to discuss. Packers win 23-16 over the New York Giants. A couple injuries and newsworthy notes here. Randall Cobb and Eddie Lacy both suffered injuries during the game. Neither considered serious. We'll find out we're speaking here on a Tuesday, so we'll find out tomorrow how much either of them does in practice. Also, Mike Pennell and Dimitri Goodson are back from their suspensions, and the Packers get a roster exemption for this week. We'll see if those guys remain on the team. There's a lot there. There's a lot of guys that could be on the chopping block and maybe some names that people like. I think it should be a little bit easier than it has been or than the Packers will make it. I think it's as simple as you replace one of them with – you replace Pennell if you want to keep him. You replace Pennell with Brian Price. And you replace Dimitri Goodson with Joe Callahan if that's what you want to do. I think it's that simple, but, of course, the Packers won't make it. As such, Jason, anything to add on those guys coming back? I know that, you know, we're not the biggest fans of Dimitri Goodson on this show, but Mike Pennell should be a nice boost for the defensive line.
Yeah, I would agree with Pennell. I'm glad to see him back. I mean, the defensive line has held up incredibly well. We were worried about this heading into the season, knowing they were going to have to kind of bring Brian Price along, who's got not a lot of experience. Kenny Clark was kind of coming back from the back injury. He didn't play a bunch in preseason, although he has made some marked strides as well, and obviously we never anticipated the incredible push we would see from the outside linebackers. So all of it's come together and really made up for that loss of Pennell mostly. But him coming back, Bill Huber on his Locked On Packers podcast, I think, said that over the two seasons Pennell's been with the team, he's good for another half yard fewer per game, or and maybe another half yard fewer per carry that teams get when he is in the game. And the Packers run defense is already, I mean, setting the world on fire after four measly games. So while we temper our expectations, it's great to have him back. Jacob, Dimitri Goodson really puzzles me. I'm surprised the Packers even bothered. I mean, I know that he's been a special teams contributor, but they had all these young guys at corner that seemed to come on during training camp. I mean, they kept, you know, Evans, they kept Bryce, who's more of a safety, they kept Hawkins. So I don't really understand the value of Dimitri Goodson other than this is another case of the Packers hanging on to somebody because they just can't or don't know how to break up with guys. I'm really not sure. So I won't be surprised if they don't bring him back and there's some contractual reason why they had to wait out his suspension to let him go. I won't be surprised if they do bring him back and send one of those other guys back down to the practice squad or out to the street. Your guess is as good as mine.
That it is, and, you know, we'll see on how a few things go as far as the Mike Pennell and Dimitri Goodson situation play out here. And you mentioned special teams, and that's where I want to start for the Giants game because it's a perfect segue here and really an ugly game on special teams for the Packers. Kickoff coverage was horrendous. The punting game was not much better. The return game, it seemed like every time the special teams took the field, either a penalty or something else negative happened outside of Mason Crosby kicking field goals. And really, I mean, Mason Crosby has been the lone bright spot of special teams this season. The kickoff return game hasn't done a whole lot. They haven't had a lot of opportunities either because of new rules and such, but not a whole lot there. The punt return game has yet to do anything spectacular. And then Jacob Shum, this is a story that I kind of brushed off in the preseason, but, you know, I was in attendance Sunday night, and I could tell you it was as bad in person as it was on television, having rewatched a little bit of that game. Jacob Shum is bad, and he hasn't been good all season. Jason, how much of a concern do you have about, one, not just the punter, but really the special teams unit in general? Because last year, under Ron Zook, the special teams were actually pretty decent. You know, Jeff Janis did his thing, and you've got Mason Crosby was obviously fantastic. The kickoff return team with Montgomery or Jeff Janis were both good. Micah Hyde was a decent punt returner. And this year it just hasn't been that way. It's been actually a pretty poor unit to start the year, especially on the punting side of things. So what are your thoughts on Ron Zook's group?
Man, I don't know. This team just, if they ever can just click on all cylinders in one season, it would be like the happiest season of my life. I don't know. This is just so bizarre. And I got to give you some props, Jacob, because I know you're not a big fan of talking about spending a bunch of time on kickers, but Shum has been so badly average. And I think I'm being generous there that he doesn't deserve as much time on this show as he's probably going to get, nor the lead segment. But that's how much of a problem it is. It is a concern. It's a huge concern. You know, another Bill Huber stat, that Shum is only like 4 yards worse than Tim Mastey was last year, you know, and that's obviously a different apples to oranges because this is 4 games through an entire season that Mastey put together last year. But you got to remember that that's a whole 16-game schedule, including November and December when the weather is different than it's been. I mean, Shum is kicking below what Mastey did all of last season through the easiest part of the year for punters because the weather is more cooperative. And the Packers have not had to play in any kind of weather. It's not even precipitated during any of their games. So, I mean, it was very manageable. You know, Jacob, you were on the field. It was very manageable Sunday night. He's just not a good kicker. But here we are dealing with the general manager who, for whatever reason, doesn't want to make a change, doesn't want to admit he made a mistake, whatever the case may be. And, you know, he'll sit there and point to Mason Crosby in 2012 and how well that worked out. But, you know, that was a kicker who had already done well and was going through a slump and then returned to form. And they knew what Mason Crosby could be at his best. We have not seen any best out of Jake Shum. There's nothing to say he's going to all of a sudden start kicking the heck out of the football as the weather gets colder. I mean, that goes against all logic. So it's a problem because the field position game is being lost by the Packers. If they get backed up at all inside their own 15, which they have a few times this season, and they go 3 and out, the other team's getting the ball at midfield or maybe already even in field goal range. I mean, that's how pathetic it is. It's bad. So you asked about my level of concern. It's high. I want to give Mason Crosby some props, though, because he's kind of an unsung hero. We don't talk about him very much because he just keeps making kicks. You know, and he was great last year, and he's been good so far this year. He's figured it out. He got through that slump. That thing, that's a thing of the past. It's a you know, running joke. It's not even worth mentioning anymore. He's one of the best kickers in the league now. So, but getting to the punting situation, what disappoints me also about that is that we hear about guys that they bring in for tryouts. I mean, they brought in C.J. Spiller, running back. You know, we usually hear about, you know, guys that they bring in, and because there's so many eyes on the punter position, even if they're bringing in some guy no one's ever heard of, you know the beat writers are going to be talking about it. I haven't heard a single word about a punter that they brought in, and they just had a bye week. They just had extra days to address this whole situation. And as far as we know, maybe they did, but I don't think they've done it.
Yeah, I don't either. And, you know, there's really no evidence to support that they have. You just mentioned you haven't heard anything about punter trying out, neither have I. And you're right, it was a manageable Sunday night. I'd argue the weather was perfect, maybe a little chilly for early October, but, I mean, it wasn't anything Arctic like you're going to get in December here in Green Bay. This reminds me of the situation. I believe it was B.J. Sander, and eventually at the very end of the season they switched to Jeremy Kapanos, and both players were equally as awful. And that was the summer – or that was the season before Tim Mastey got to Green Bay, I believe. So – not good on the punting side of things, but, you know, Jason, as you mentioned, I don't like spending a ton of time on kickers, so if it's okay, I'm going to move on to the offense. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, this is a situation that if this is how he's going to continue to punt, it needs to be addressed because eventually we'll get to the defense here, obviously, but the field position game is going to be a big deal in a playoff game if the Packers are fortunate enough to make that, and we assume – but they will because we think this team is good enough to do those things. Something small like field position can win or lose a game. And that's a big deal. And that's something that, you know, we'll have to continue to monitor as the season goes on. Right now, it looks like that the Packers would have been much better off with either Tim Mastey as the incumbent or even keeping Peter Mortel because both look like they've kicked better than Shum has so far. Let's move to the offense. One game after the theoretical return to form, 31 points in the first half, you know, going up and down the field. The Packers, not quite as consistent this week, a little more up and down. They had a 16-play drive the first series of the game, stuffed it in the end zone with a Rodgers touchdown pass to Jordy Nelson. They used a lot of different formations. They ran the ball well. They threw it well. They converted third downs. The Packers overall did a very good job on that first series, ending in a Jordy Nelson touchdown. And then you've got a touchdown pass to Devontae Adams. Beautiful throw. Great catch by Adams. A play that I guarantee you he drops last season without question. And then you add in three Mason Crosby field goals, and you get the 23 points. But in between there, you have two Aaron Rodgers interceptions, one of which was either in the red zone or very close to it. It was off Jordy Nelson's hand. You have drop passes from Jordy Nelson specifically. I can think of a couple, two or three off the top of my head. Jordy didn't have a very good night outside of the touchdown reception. And he even said so himself that his drop passes were embarrassing. So those are his words as far as his night went. And then the people's champ, I got to bring him up because Jeff Janis did get some time in Sunday's game, but promptly you saw why and heard why from Mike McCarthy as to why he struggles so much to get on the field. And the Packers ran their shot play, and I knew exactly what was happening. I was standing over on the side, and you've got the play action, and you've got Rodgers rolling out, and I just immediately said to myself, he's going deep. While I turned and looked deep down the field, and I see two guys standing down there, and one of them is Jordy Nelson and the other one's Jeff Janis. So I'm wondering who the ball is intended for, and I'm assuming Jordy Nelson, but you don't know. And then you wonder why the route concept was that way, and I'm assuming that it can't be that poor. Well, Mike McCarthy said that Janis got way too far inside and deep on that route, and that's, you know, maybe that was the difference in what could have been a really big play for the Packers offense, and that's a play that's been missing from their offense for about a year now. So big deal there. And you see, you know, like I said, he got action on offense and he promptly screwed up one of his plays. There's another play that comes to mind where Randall Cobb made a play on a third down and you could see Janis kind of able to set it up by running a deep route without being able to show you guys the tape. I'm really not able to do this explanation justice, but you know, his speed does do some things for a defense, but his mental lapses as well change some things. But overall, Jason, what I want to know is Rodgers kind of had a mixed game. He had two touchdowns. He had some really nice throws. He had two touchdowns that were dropped. Richard Rodgers dropped one. He had one that was called back to Randall Cobb. That was a penalty for an illegal shift when they tried to get the 12 men on the field. But he could have thrown five touchdown passes and maybe just one interception. But at the end of the day, it was two touchdowns, two interceptions, and he did miss some open receivers. So the talking heads, and I use that term pretty loosely considering one of them is Colin Cowherd, but they seem to be concerned about him. Are you?
Can't believe we're quoting Colin Cowherd, but, you know, good for you, Jacob, for being fair, I guess.
Hey, you may be
no,
talking about
I'm
Diego
not.
Ortiz. You're talking about Colin Cowherd.
I did. That's true. Yeah. Colin Cowherd, and you know, because now that ESPN got rid of that disease called Skip Bayless, Colin Cowherd is, and he's kind of banished off to whatever. What is he on, Fox Sports 1 now?
Yeah, he and
Colin Cowherd Cowherd may take over as troll, Rodgers troll A number one, but I'm not too worried about it. Jason Hirschhorn tweeted out that Rodgers' mechanics really aren't that much different this season than they were in 2014 when the Packers' offense was setting the world on fire. So you mentioned some of the plays that were missed, and the narratives go crazy in the NFL or in football because there's a week in between games and there's so much extra time to analyze and talk about specific matchups that these narratives just take on a life of their own and they just go absolutely berserk. And it's crazy. So obviously the key thing that people key on is anything that looks bad about what Aaron Rodgers is doing, well, then he's struggling or he's not doing well. And so then, you know, there you have it. That's basically all everybody clings to. But I mean, Rodgers is, he's making some throws. Receivers aren't making their catches. Nelson had a rough night. I gave him a lame call in the game ball's lame calls post earlier this week. Richard Rodgers, that's a tough catch to make, but it's one he should make. Anytime you get two hands on the football, you got to catch it. So Packers left some points out on the field for sure. And then Rodgers had, you know, he had the one bad throw for the interception. I mean, Nelson tipped one and then that got picked off. So, yeah, I mean, he's not his precise total self that doesn't make those mistakes. But we've all been kind of clamoring for Rodgers to take some more chances. And so, okay, he's doing it. Maybe he's not doing it in the right spots and he's doing it poorly at times. And his completion percentage was not good and his quarterback rating was not good. But it could have been better, like you said, Jacob. So I'm not going to be too concerned because we saw a glimpse of what we remember in the first half of the Detroit game. And I think a nice test is coming up here against the Cowboys. And the Cowboys are a good team. You know, Packers are still at home. Let's see what Rodgers can do against Dallas. If he looks good and the rest of the team cooperates and does their part, and he's near 100 in quarterback rating, doesn't turn the ball over, and he throws for a couple touchdowns, and he's close to 200 yards passing, I think we're done with this conversation. I think Aaron Rodgers is going to be fine. I think the Packers' offense is going to be fine. So as far as he goes, didn't have a great game statistically, but they got the win, and there were enough chances out there that I'm not worried. I'm not in any kind of panic mode as far as 12 goes.
This shit makes me laugh every week because it's just funny how a narrative can emerge from one game. I mean, a week ago, 2 weeks ago, we're talking about how the Packers offense is back and Aaron Rodgers threw 4 touchdowns and no interceptions. And now, again, people are bringing up, and I brought it up more just so we could laugh at it, but, I mean, now people are bringing up what's wrong with Aaron Rodgers because he had 2 touchdowns and 2 interceptions and, you know, he missed a couple throws here or there, and I know that, and, you know, it's just one of those things. I fully expect him to end up being himself by the middle point of this season because everybody remembers, I think it's a little bit more frustrating because typically the Packers offense does start slow. And the reason that's more cause for concern this year is because of how last year went. But overall, you can see things. The offense is better this year than it was last year. Now, they haven't gotten the big plays yet. I know that. Or at least not as many. But they'll get those, and I'll get to that here momentarily because the other thing that really goes into that and the Packers offense from Sunday night is that they ran the ball down the Giants' throat before Eddie Lacy got hurt. Lacy was averaging more than 7 yards a carry. He was bouncing off of people. He looked like a passionate, angry runner. And this is a defensive line that is run by Snacks Harrison, and it's supposed to be a defensive line that is stout against the run. And it was supposed to be a poor matchup for the Packers offensive line because Harrison is a powerful dude, and he's going against J.C. Treader, who's not as good at moving powerful guys. And the Packers just said, forget that, and they rammed it down their throat. So the story that came out from the Press Gazette, and I believe it was written by Pete Doherty, is – you know, Packers offense is better when Eddie Lacy is the focal point. So, Jason, what I want to know is, should the Packers maybe be more focused on running the ball and opening up everything else that way instead of chucking it all over the field early on?
So, I don't even think you and I had a chance to talk about this, but this is my absolute key to not just the offense. This is my absolute key to the Packers season and their success for the rest of this year. So mark this date, mark this statement, send my comments to Freezing Cold Takes and earmark it, like it, bookmark it, whatever you need to do. This is what the key to the Packers season is going to be. It's going to be the running game. And obviously Eddie Lacy's health is a big concern. He's got the ankle injury. Last year when he hurt his ankle, he was awful. He was also a much different player last year. He's looking a lot more like the 2014-2013 version of Lacy, although we talked about it a little bit last night. I don't think Lacy's ever going to return to his rookie form. He had an ankle injury kind of late that season, but he was able to play through it and still was effective late in the year and was carrying that team while Aaron Rodgers was recovering from his broken collarbone. Lacy is going to be the key, and it's got to be Lacy because apparently the Packers don't think that they are going to improve on or find anybody better than James Starks to be the two of the 1-2 punch. And James Starks has been pretty marginal, and he was average again Sunday night, and he nearly coughed up the ball and gave the Giants possession in Packers territory late in the game with a chance to take the lead and win the game, which would have been a tragedy. So Eddie Lacy is the linchpin. Aaron Rodgers, the offense runs through Aaron Rodgers. It's all about passing. It's all about what 12 does. I get that. I'm not saying that that goes away. But Eddie Lacy and that run game is going to be utterly important, because as Nelson continues to get his legs back, as this offense continues to find their identity, I mean, you want to talk about narratives, Jacob. I don't know about a narrative, but this buzzword of find their identity, I hear this so much on the Green and Gold postgame show. You know, the Packers offense just needs to find its identity. Okay, we're going into the fifth game here. We're going into the sixth week of the season. Like, we're almost halfway through, weirdly enough. You got to know what's happening. And Eddie Lacy needs to be a big part of it. You saw how well the offense clicked and moved when he was healthy and he was running well. He broke off a couple nice runs early in that game. I mean, that's obvious. It's the old adage. It's going to open up things deep later. It's going to open up the play action, and it opens up the playbook. It takes the pressure off of Aaron Rodgers, because when he has to chuck it 40 times, you know, because of the way things have been going lately and with his stats, I mean, we can't ignore the fact that he's not lighting it up. So, you know, it's not like he has to become a game manager. Aaron Rodgers is still a great talent, still a great quarterback, and can make throws that a lot of quarterbacks can't, and he should try to make those throws and throw the ball in tight windows and do what he does. But this is the running the football successfully is the absolute key. And the one thing we have to talk about here, Jacob, or at least mention briefly, if nothing else, is how important Aaron Ripkowski has become in this run game. When he's on the field in that I formation and Lacy's following Ripper, he hits the hole harder. He's got more confidence in what's going on. There's less dancing around. Ripkowski had a couple carries. Actually carried the football, did his best John Kuhn impression, dragged the entire Giants defense 10 yards on a play late that was very Kuhn-esque. I mean, let's not forget about the fullback. There's a reason he's on this roster, and he proved how important he is probably going to be. So there you have it. The run game to me, until I see differently, that's the key to this entire team's success. I think by the end of the year, whatever happens, however the Packers season ends, whether it's the best way possible or they get ousted out of the playoffs, I'm almost positive that the run game is going to be either reason number one or reason number two because of it.
Well, I just know that you spent a lot of time on Aaron Ripkowski, and Tattletown Sound Off is going to love us for it. Let's move to defense, because that really was the stronger unit on Sunday night, and really everybody and their mother, as soon as the Demaryius Randall news broke, basically said, this is a shootout. And until the final, I think it was the final 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes or so of the game, the Giants hadn't scored a touchdown. And that's incredible to me, because the Giants have Sterling Shepard, they have Victor Cruz, and obviously they have Odell Beckham Jr. And Odell Beckham, after I astutely pointed out on Twitter, was going to have 150 receiving yards and 2 touchdowns. He fell 100 receiving yards short of that and 1 touchdown short of that. So props to Ladarius Gunter, Quentin Rollins, and Micah Hyde for their work on the back end on Sunday night. But really, the big story still remains, Jason, especially with the Cowboys coming in this week, the run defense. They have yet to allow an individual running back to gain 50 yards in a game this season. That's incredible. So I want to know, overall, are you buying this, or is it just like 2013 when they were the number one run defense through, I believe it was 9 games, and then they had a bad night against the Bears, and then they just fell apart from there. So are you buying it, or do you need a little more information?
I do need more information. I'm buying it so far. I think NFL teams are NFL teams, so it's not like we completely ignore the stat, but you're not going to see me going on Twitter and posting anything about the Packers' run defense being comparable to the 1985 Bears. I have seen some tweets about some other team's defense and a comparison to the 85 Bears, which I find preposterous this early in the season. I don't care how well any team is performing. So this weekend, obviously, big test. because of the running back, Ezekiel Elliott, because of the offensive line, Dallas, which is still very good. I don't know if statistically they're as good as they have been in the past, but, you know, this weekend will do a lot to get everybody's true buy-in. But we have to remember, we've seen the Packers, and it happened in the season, like you mentioned, you know, when they were doing well in 13, and then all of a sudden they kind of fell apart at the end. We've seen this defense give up as many yards in one game as they've given up through four. So once we see the performance against, and this goes back to any kind of barometer for a team. If your passing defense is good, okay, well, how do they fare against a really good quarterback? If your run defense is good, how do they fare against an elite running back? The old, you know, obvious test. So this weekend will be the key. I'm not quite 100% sold, but I'm not complaining either, because it's forcing teams to become more one-dimensional on offense. And I really liked what I saw from the defense against what can be a pretty formidable passing offense when their quarterback doesn't decide to suck it up all night, which was a joy to see, by the way, in Eli Manning. So got to give it up to the defense for finally kind of figuring out the middle of the field. Now, there were some plays where the Giants beat themselves. I think the tight end dropped what looked like could have been a touchdown pass. So the seam, the middle of the field, is still not totally solved, but I think this defense has at least some sort of a roadmap to how they can be successful and how they can defend some of these obvious issues that they have been having. But as far as the run D goes, this weekend is for all the marbles in terms of whether we're skeptics or believers.
Well, and their roadmap, like you mentioned, is to stop the run on early downs and get those pass rushers on the field. Clay Matthews, Julius Peppers, Dayton Jones, Nick Perry had a sack. So Matthews and Perry had a sack on Sunday night. And then the other one that you have is from Kyler Fackrell. And this was a guy who caused a little bit of skepticism when he was picked in the third round, because he's 25 years old and kind of a project in some ways. And this guy has just made a play in every single game. He had a play just before the half that led to a Packers field goal. He sacks Eli Manning. He strips the ball, and then fellow rookie Kenny Clark recovered it. I think that's kind of the most encouraging sign, at least from this defense early on the season, is they've got a lot of young guys, and you haven't really seen a lot of them come up as liable. I mean, obviously, you know, Josh Hawkins had a bad play against the Lions. You've got plays here or there, but there hasn't been a liability by some of these young guys being pressed into action. And that's an encouraging sign, because, you know, when the roadmap is stop the run and rush the passer, well, you're relying on a lot of young guys to stop the run. Kenny Clark, Dean Lowry, Mike Daniels, still the young guy, even though he's a stud. Blake Martinez and Jake Ryan. And I know, Jason, those are the two guys you want to talk about. Those guys have been as good a tandem in the middle as I can remember in quite some time. They don't look stiff, they don't look slow, and they don't look indecisive, which is really what the Packers have had at that position since the days of Desmond Bishop. I don't really know what else to say on that. But so what's your take here in general on Blake and Jake?
Well, like you said, I want to give them some credit, because Jake Ryan – I think he had a tough opening game, but he's come on in the second wave here, these next three games that they've had. So he's playing well. I mean, he's not a really fast guy, but he's getting to the ball. He's getting to the ball when he needs to. Blake Martinez, you know, when is that guy's nose going to heal? I mean, for crying out loud, man, he had a bye week, he had 2 weeks off. He's still wearing that big ass Band-Aid over his nose. I mean, that's, I don't know. I'm glad he's able to play through it. He plays with emotion. He plays quick. He's not a super fast guy. I know in coverage, you know, neither of them are great. But these are two smart players. And that's what I liked about Jake Ryan, was he'll make up for what he lacks in speed and athleticism with his smarts. And he'll eventually start making some bigger plays, I think. Blake Martinez is going to make a ton of big plays, because I don't know if this is just rookie luck or what it is, but you mentioned Desmond Bishop and A.J. Hawk, who obviously were the tandem in 10 when they won the championship. I mean, there may not be there yet, but these two could certainly surpass what those two had to offer, because I think Blake Martinez is going to start taking on more responsibility as time goes on. He's going to pick up more on the, you know, blitzing, rushing the quarterback, those types of things. So I'm very encouraged by that. And obviously, the pass rush in the front have done a great job. The defense is really the story of this team so far, and one of the reasons why they've been able to stay in it and win games, because if you're going to hold opponents to under 20 points, you know, everyone's talking about Minnesota's defense, and they should be. The Vikings have a very, very good defense. It's incredible this year. Packers aren't too bad either. I mean, I think this divisional race is going to kind of be what the NFC West was when Arizona and Seattle were duking it out, and you had, or, you know, even go back to the days when you had San Francisco and Seattle duking it out, and you had these two really good defensive teams, and, you know, that's how you win games. So that's going to be exciting to watch those guys develop, because they're extremely young. And finally, the position that was such a weakness and a big hole in this roster, looks like not only have they solved it, but they've got a solution if these guys stay healthy for quite a few years to come.
Definitely how it looks. And, you know, you kind of mentioned it. The defense right now, this is always subject to change, but the defense right now is the strength of the team. And that's something that seems crazy to say when Aaron Rodgers is the starting quarterback of the team. But that is how it is, and that's kind of how it's been for the last year and four games or so. And, you know, we'll see if that continues. If it is, I don't know if it's such a bad thing. You know, the Packers had a really good defense the last time they won the Super Bowl, you know, 6 years ago. So it can't be a bad thing if that's the strength of the team. I'll just say that. Unless it's a bad defense, I guess that would be a problem then. But I digress. So that brings us to the Ticket King of the game. Again, Ticket King, I walked right past it on Sunday right before I went to the game. So please get your tickets there. Go in, cheer on the Packers. That's where our sponsor comes from, and we appreciate that. So my Ticket King of the game is a guy I talked about all offseason. And he kind of had, you know, he wasn't the best receiver on the field because that title belongs to somebody else on that given night. But he made a lot of big plays, and he looked like a different player than he did last season, and that's Devontae Adams. Devontae had a great play on a touchdown just before the half. He scored on a 26-yarder. I don't remember the yardage to be exactly, but it was a play that I guarantee he would not have made a year ago. He would have either dropped the ball or fallen down out of bounds or something of the sort. He looked different, and it wasn't just one play for him. He was making plays after the catch, breaking tackles, whereas last year it was literally when he caught the ball, that was it. He was done, he was out, and he was down on the ground and nothing after the catch. And he was making plays after catch. He's making plays in the middle of the field. I told you guys before the season started, I don't know if he's ever going to be a star, but he's definitely a productive player, or at least so I think. So that is my guy, Devontae Adams. So, Jason, who's your Ticket King of the game?
Well, and because I like to yap about everything under the sun, and I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to before I do my Ticket King of the game. I just want to say, you know, the thing about Devontae Adams is, and you, Jacob, absolutely 100%. You've been Team Adams the whole time, and so props for sticking with him because he's starting to look like the receiver that we saw at the end of 2014. You and I were both in the house for the Patriots game. Everyone talks about that. He's already had a couple games this season that I think may have surpassed that in terms of the actual overall production that he's had. So I think that he's going to start to build his reputation on these games moving forward, and we can stop talking about games from 2 years ago. The swagger. Catches the football. He's making guys miss. This kid, when he's confident and when he feels good about what he's doing and feels like he can outrun anybody on the field and he can outjuke anybody on the field, and I point back to the Dallas game when he made those Cowboys playoff game in 2014, the divisional round, when he made those two safeties look like chumps, that is the Devontae Adams that is going to be so dangerous. Another thing, too, he made a catch on Sunday night. I thought he was Jordy Nelson for a second because he was wide open, caught the ball with his hands, tucked it away, started running with it. I'm like, you know, if Tay Adams is going to start looking like Jordy Nelson, and Jordy Nelson is Jordy Nelson, and Randall Cobb had the game that he had, this receiving core with Aaron Rodgers is going to do some fun things. So, absolutely, good choice for Tay Adams. I'm going with Cobb just because of the night that he had. He had a great night, multiple, you know, many catches. This is his best game in the last two seasons. He wasn't able to step up last year because too much – you know, emphasis placed on him. Without Nelson, there was too much, you know, it was too easy for defenses to take him away. He had a hard time stepping up and being that number one guy. He's not really a number one type of receiver anyway. He's not an outside guy, so he's in the slot, and he needs other guys to kind of do what they do to open things up. And when you're relying on Devontae Adams, who's dropping a football, like you said, Jacob, not doing his part. Jeff Janis doesn't know how to run the routes, and there's really nobody else on the outside that can get it done. I guess it was James Jones last year. Cobb just had a tough year last year, but he looked great in this game and was everything that we kind of hoped that he can be. The only complaint I have is get him out of the damn backfield. I've talked about it a million times, but that's neither here nor there. I went with Randall Cobb for the great production that he had, and thank goodness it sounds like he is okay, because that shot he took at the end of the game did not look pretty at all.
No, it didn't, and it looks like, McCarthy said it doesn't appear to be anything serious, but that is the end of the Giants breakdown portion of this show, and as promised, as one of my friends and esteemed colleague, if you want to call it that, Brad Jones once said, you can't spell sucks without Eli. So Packers win 23-16, beat the New York Giants and move on to the Dallas Cowboys. And that leads us to the question portion of the show. The question we got is from Mr. Tom, if your last name is pronounced Nowitzki, you are my new favorite person on this show. That is fantastic, even though it's spelled differently. But he said that everybody's talking about the Packers D against the Dallas offense. And what about the other side of the ball? Because he thinks that our offensive line is a better matchup versus the Dallas defense. And I agree, because the Cowboys don't have a ton in the way of pass rushers. And I don't know if anybody outside of the Vikings game, the Packers offensive line has played very well in the pass blocking game and the run blocking game. As much talk as there was about Lane Taylor being a starter and not being ready and not being Josh Sitton, he's been steady. David Bakhtiari's been very good. Balaga's healthy. He's good. Treader's been good. And T.J. Lang is T.J. Lang. So, you know, this is the matchup the Packers can down. A lot of people talk about the Cowboys' running game, and deservedly so. Ezekiel Elliott's the leading rusher in the NFL this season and has done very well as a rookie. The Packers can do the same thing to the Cowboys up front. As I mentioned before the season started, I'm not sure what exactly the Cowboys are supposed to be good at on defense. So as I say that, Packers can dominate this game up front just like the Cowboys are capable of as well. So that's how I feel in that matchup. Jason, what are your thoughts on up front against the Dallas defense?
Yeah, the Packers offensive line is kind of doing their impression of the Dallas offensive line over the past couple of years and playing really well. You mentioned Lane Taylor. He's been steady in place of Josh Sitton to the point where we can probably almost stop talking about it, because Josh Sitton is now a Chicago Bear and Lane Taylor is the starting left guard for the Green Bay Packers. So David Bakhtiari has been great at left tackle. I think he's earned that payday that he got. I think that hopefully the Packers plan to bring back T.J. Lang. I hope they do. I think they can afford to do that now that Sitton's kind of been the odd man out, which I agree with. And I'd love to see Lang back because I think he's still got a lot to offer. He got out there and was pretty athletic on some of those screen plays, and that's something I'd like to see more of from the offense. But, yeah, I think Green Bay's offensive line is up for the task against – I mean, I thought – New York was a pretty good test because you had Olivier Vernon, you got Jason Pierre-Paul, and those aren't any slouches up front there. It's not the NASCAR package that we used to see, so it's not like it was an elite pass rush, and the Giants certainly aren't elite, but it was a measuring stick, and then I think the Cowboys will add, you know, they'll offer another one this season. But I have no reservations about the Packers being able to try to establish the run. I think if they run into any issues, it might be more about what Eddie Lacy is able to do and not so much what the offensive line doesn't do. So that's just kind of my take on that whole thing there. I think that's a great question, though, that Tom brings up, because like I said, you know, earlier, these narratives just, they start happening, they get out of control, and then everyone forgets these other little factors that might creep up and become a thing, and then all of a sudden it's this big surprise. So, yeah, I mean, the Packers in the trenches, you know, we talked about the defensive line and up front the offensive line. I mean, that's where a lot of games are won and lost. And if that's the case, I think the Packers are going to probably win quite a few games this year because they're stout on both of their lines. So it's definitely signs for encouragement. It's a home game and no reason to think the Packers can't do what they want to do on offense. I mean, the Cowboys get paid too. They'll probably make a few plays, but I feel good about up front. I think they'll be able to then keep Aaron Rodgers clean as well.
It's interesting that we say that, too, because this is a team that typically has a reputation as a team that's soft
doesn't like to play physical, et cetera, et cetera. And so far, their biggest strengths have been running the ball and stopping the run, which is the exact opposite of what the strength of a soft team would be. Obviously, a lot of people are going to talk about the rushing offense against the rushing defense. I think that that's going to be beaten into the ground by others. So what I want to do is talk about, do you think the Packers can slow down Dak Prescott? Because assuming the strength of this defense is their run defense, I don't know if they'll hold Zeke Elliott to under 50 yards, but they should be able to limit him at least to some degree. But if they do that, then they're going to have to stop Dak Prescott and Cole Beasley, and hopefully everybody in Green Bay's favorite receiver, Dez Bryant, is able to play. So that would be another case of a guy and another weapon that they would have to stop. But do you think that they can slow those guys down, specifically the rookie Dak Prescott?
I guess we will see, because I'm kind of answering this slowly as I try to go back through the memory banks. The Packers have not really seen a quarterback that could get out and move very well, unless you consider Matt Stafford a mobile guy, which he's not mobile, but he can run a little bit. This is going to be a big test for that rushing defense. And I don't know what the magic number is. I don't even know if I have one. I mean, if Ezekiel Elliott goes off for 150 yards rushing, but the Packers force two turnovers and they end up getting, you know, building a huge lead, or, you know, they hold the Cowboys passing offense to under 200 yards, then is that a fair trade? Sure, as long as they win the game. So, you know, Prescott's interesting. He's a guy, and all the talk in Dallas is we're talking about narratives. I mean, one of the funny narratives out of Dallas, I guess I say funny because, it's Jerry Jones. Who knows what he's going to do? But there are so many people saying that Prescott should maintain his starting job even when Romo's healthy and ready to come back. I mean, you go into Lambeau Field and you beat the Green Bay Packers and you run on a good running defense that's been able to shut everybody else down. Yeah, that's a case that could certainly be made. So I think it's going to be fun to watch, but, you know, I think you got to give the Packers the edge. They're playing at home. They're experienced. Prescott's still kind of feeling his way through it, and this is a big road test for him, and it's going to be a tough environment for him to run in and succeed in. So hopefully they can keep him in check.
Peter Bukowski had some interesting numbers today on Dom Capers Packers defenses against rookie quarterbacks. And what he said was, you know, there's only two, I think, that have exceeded 250 yards or something like that. One was Andrew Luck. Jason, you remember that well. And the other was Cam Newton. And then the other stat that he had was the only rookie quarterback to escape the game interception-free, his first game against Dom Capers' Packers defense interception-free, was Russell Wilson. And, well, we all know that that's not the case. So basically, the Packers do well against rookie quarterbacks, and I know Dak Prescott's done some good things, but I'm just not ready to jump all in on the Dak Prescott thing just yet. So I think that they'll be able to do enough, you'll obviously see that here when I get to my prediction briefly. But since it is Cowboys week, you can't have the Cowboys come to Lambeau Field against the Packers, at least in recent memory. Jason, I'll ask, did Dez Bryant catch the ball?
Of course he didn't. Dez Bryant did not catch that football.
Okay, so as I put several times throughout the week, Dez dropped it. So I think that's the motto for the week. Brings us to the final part here. Prediction, Packers-Cowboys. It's a 3:25 kickoff. It's at Lambeau Field. And also they will be honoring Brett Favre at halftime of this game as they – I believe they're giving him his Hall of Fame ring is how that works this weekend. So Brett Favre will be in the house. It'll be fun. Hopefully the Packers do a little bit better this year than they did last year for ceremonies for Ron Wolf and Brett Favre. They lost both of those games, so hopefully this is a little different. And I think it will be. I think the Packers' run defense will do enough. I'm not sure that they'll limit Zeke to under 50 yards, like I said. They'll make enough plays against Dak Prescott. Rodgers and the offense will do enough. 24-17, I'm not expecting them to light up the scoreboard, but I do expect them to win, move on to 4-1 before heading into a Thursday night matchup against the Chicago Bears. But I like Green Bay 24-17. Jason, what do you got?
So I'm going to go a little bit closer here. I just think that Dallas has kind of come up a little bit, and they're going to be pumped coming in here trying to get a big win, get a statement. Packers want to do the same thing. So I've got – I haven't really thought about a score here, but for some reason I'm thinking 24-21. I mean, the Packers just don't light it up anymore. I don't think either defense is going to get torched. So you figure 24-21 is about the average of what these teams have been doing. And that's about par for the course for Green Bay. As a matter of fact, 21 points to give up is a little more than they have been giving up if you take out the Lions game. So got it in by field goal. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think the line is like 4.5 right now, which could change between now and the and game time. So Vegas always seems to know what they're doing. I'm going to keep it close. But, you know, the Packers are wearing the throwbacks. They just don't lose when they wear those. I'm sure they eventually will at some point. I mean, the Lions finally won a game at Lambeau Field last year, so never say never, but I'm feeling pretty good about it. The Cowboys own the 90s, and I feel like they kind of sold their soul a little bit, and now the Packers are getting some payback with all these home games and these big wins over the boys. So that's what I got.
You are right. The line in Vegas is 4 points, so there you go. We both like Green Bay to win. We both like Green Bay to win in a closer game than maybe some will hope. But that will do it for today's show. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. You can follow the show on Twitter. We are at Packer Pulse. You can follow Jason. He's at Jason Barone. You can follow me. I'm at Jacob Westendorf. Send us your questions. Thank you. Tom Nowitzki. And again, if I'm pronouncing your name wrong, please don't correct me, because that's really what I want your last name to be, or at least how I want it to be pronounced. So just let me have that if you could. But thank you for your question. We appreciate you sending that in. Ticket King of the game, Jason had Randall Cobb. I have Devontae Adams, Ticket King. Again, right down the street from the stadium. It's not far. Order your tickets, go there, pick them up, walk in. See me there, wave, say hi, those kinds of things. Packers Cowboys, 325 this weekend. It'll be the third consecutive home game. Out of four before they take on the Chicago Bears. We'll be back to break that down next week, hopefully after another win. Thank you guys, as always, for listening, and go, Pat, go.
Of the Packs Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at ticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.